Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Anne Ball, and Steve Ember. But first, this report from Alice Bryant.
In English conversation, when we respond to a speaker, we often do not repeat all of their words. Instead, we may say just a few words. The speaker understands our meaning based on what is being said in the conversation. You will hear and see examples of this everywhere that English is spoken. On the American television show The Simpsons, for instance, Bart Simpson is a rebellious youth. He likes to play tricks on others. His favorite person to trouble is Groundskeeper Willie, an unpleasant man who works on the grounds at Bart's school. Listen to a short exchange between Bart and Willie.
Willie, I've got a girlfriend.
Really? Well, I do too. She's a bikini model from Sweden.
Hey, that's great.
Bart walks away, seemingly not believing Willie. But suddenly, Willie's beautiful Swedish girlfriend appears. You heard Willie say, "I do too," in response to Bart. English speakers everywhere use short responses like this one in speech and some kinds of writing. On an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we talked about using the words so and neither in short responses of agreement. Today, I will talk about to and either. All four words can be used to say that what is true for some person is also true for us. The word to shows agreement with positive statements, and the word either shows agreement with negative statements. You will hear and see examples of both today. But first, let's talk about how to form these statements. When we use to and either to show agreement, they appear at the end. The structure for to is subject plus auxiliary or be plus to. Auxiliary verbs are helping verbs that do things like help form verb tenses. The verbs do, be, and have, for example, can act as auxiliary verbs or main verbs, depending on how they are used. In Willie's statement, "I do too," the word I is the subject and do is the auxiliary. To comes at the end and, in written form, often follows a comma. The structure for either is subject plus auxiliary or be plus either. If Bart had said, "I don't have a girlfriend," and that was also true for Willie, his response could have been, "I don't either." When we use to and either this way, the verb tense in the response matches the verb tense in the original statement. Let's look at the simple present verb tense first, and I will show you what I mean. We can say "I do too" and "I don't either" to agree with statements in the simple present tense. Listen to an exchange between speakers.
She speaks a second language.
I do too.
She doesn't speak a second language.
I don't either.
Note that the auxiliary verb do is used in the simple present tense in the responses. but when the main verb is be, we do not use an auxiliary verb. To agree with simple present statements, when the main verb is be, we can say, I am too, and I'm not either. Listen to this exchange.
Ivan is an international student.
I am too.
Ivan is not an international student.
I'm not either.
Pay close attention to this next one. We also say, I am too, and I'm not either, to agree with statements in the present continuous verb tense. This verb tense is sometimes called be plus ing.
Jocelyn is going to the antique show.
I am too.
Jocelyn isn't going to the antique show.
I'm not either.
Here the verb be acts as an auxiliary verb. The main verb is go, and it's in the ing form. Now we will move to the simple past tense. We can say I did too and I didn't either to agree with statements in the simple past tense. Let's hear how our speakers use them.
We watched The Simpsons yesterday.
I did too.
We didn't watch The Simpsons yesterday.
I didn't either.
And lastly, we can say I was too and I wasn't either to agree with simple past statements when the main verb is be. Here's what our speakers say.
I was happy about the book deal.
I was too.
I wasn't happy about the book deal.
I wasn't either.
You can find examples with other verb tenses as well as modal auxiliary verbs on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. And now for a few closing thoughts. You might be wondering about the expression me too to respond to positive statements and me neither to respond to negative statements. In English, these expressions are very informal, but in everyday conversation, completely acceptable. Another thing to note is that too, either, so, and neither are not just for responses. Sometimes, one speaker can state two or more agreeing ideas. For example,
Penny was happy about the book deal. I was too.
Well, that's all for today. Listen and watch for these short responses everywhere you hear and see English being used. If you like watching The Simpsons, for instance, you'll find lots of examples. I'm Alice Bryant.
A United Nations report says many North Koreans are forced to pay bribes to receive food and other necessities of life. The UN Human Rights Office published the report this week. It was based on discussions with more than 200 North Korean escapees who fled their homeland. The report said North Korea's economy has long been failing and that the government is unable to provide its citizens with life's basic necessities. Michelle Bachelet is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. In a statement, she said the UN believes people in all countries of the world should be given rights to food, health, shelter, work, and freedom of movement. In North Korea, however, such rights depend primarily on the ability of individuals to bribe state officials, Bachelet said. Since the economic collapse of the 1990s, North Koreans have been unable to survive through a state-led model of centralized economic planning and distribution, the UN said in a statement.
This situation has forced North Koreans to seek out activities outside the country's official economic system to survive, the report said. It added that seeking out such activities to get food and other necessities has become an important part of survival. However, citizens who take part in this kind of economic activity risk being arrested and detained, the report noted. UN officials estimated earlier this month that about 10 million North Koreans are experiencing severe food shortages and lack safe drinking water. The 2018 Global Hunger Index called North Korea's hunger situation serious and bordering on alarming. Experts say further cuts to already low government food rations are expected following the worst harvest in 10 years. North Korean officials rejected the UN report. The country's UN office in Switzerland said in a statement, "Such reports are nothing more than fabrication." North Korea has blamed its economic problems and humanitarian situation on economic restrictions the UN has placed on the country. The restrictions were put in place to punish North Korea for its nuclear and missile development programs. The new UN report accuses the North Korean government of increasing military funding while carrying out economic mismanagement in other areas. I'm Brian Lin.
A university in the U.S. state of Georgia this month dismissed two Chinese-American scientists for not disclosing sources of overseas financing and research ties in China. Emory University fired brain scientist Li Xiaojiang and his wife Li Shihua on May 16. The two led and operated a laboratory and have worked at Emory for more than 20 years. Emory said Li and his wife failed to fully disclose overseas sources of research funding and their professional ties to China. Investigators took computers and documents and questioned members of their team. Both the Lees are U.S. citizens. As researchers, they are known for gene editing technology and studies of Huntington disease in animals. Li told Science Insider that he was shocked by Emory's move to terminate him in such an unusual and abrupt way. He added that he did not receive exact details for the reasons behind his termination. The university closed the laboratory while Li was visiting China. It gave four Chinese postdoctoral students working there 30 days to leave the United States. Li said he had told Emory University about his Chinese research activity every year since 2012. Emory said it acted on a warning issued by Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health in the United States. Last August, Collins warned of hidden sources of overseas funding for researchers working at NIH-supported institutions. Science Insider reports that the NIH has been in contact with two U.S. universities for several months about whether researchers are following agency rules on revealing foreign funding. Emery said in a statement that the two researchers failed to fully disclose foreign sources of research funding and the extent of their work for research institutions and universities in China. The NIH told Congress that it has identified at least 190 researchers receiving money known as grants who may have problematic foreign relationships. It also said that at least 55 institutions have begun investigations. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States entered the Second World War in December of 1941. Europe had already been at war since 1939, but the United States did not enter World War II until Japanese forces attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack was a surprise, but American military and political leaders had believed that the United States, sooner or later, would be pulled into the fighting, and they began to prepare for war. President Franklin Roosevelt had been Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson during World War I. He remembered how American troops were not ready for that war. Now that he was president, Roosevelt wanted to be sure that the United States would be ready when it had to fight. Throughout 1941, Roosevelt urged American industries to produce more weapons and other military supplies. He established new government agencies to work with industry to increase arms production. Some business leaders resisted Roosevelt's efforts. They felt there was no need to produce more arms while the United States was still at peace. But many others cooperated, and by the time Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, the American economy was producing millions of guns and other weapons. Still, this was not enough to fight a war. After the Japanese attack, Roosevelt increased his demands on American industry. He called for 60,000 warplanes, 45,000 tanks, and 20,000 anti-aircraft guns. And he wanted all these within 1 year. A month after the Pearl Harbor raid, Roosevelt organized a special committee to direct military production. He created another group to help companies find men and women for defense work. And he established a new office where the nation's best scientists and engineers could work together to design new weapons. These new government organizations faced several problems. Sometimes factories produced too much of one product and not enough of another. Sometimes tools broke, and some business owners refused to accept government orders. But the weapons were produced, and American troops soon had the guns and supplies they needed. The federal government had to quickly expand its own workforce to meet war needs. Federal spending increased from $6 billion in 1940 to $89 billion in 1944. That was 15 times as much spending in just 5 years. Roosevelt had to take strong steps to get the money for all this spending. He put limits on wages. He increased income taxes to as much as 94% on portions of incomes over $200,000. And he asked the American people to lend money to the federal government. The people answered by purchasing almost $100 billion in war bonds. The great increase in public spending raised the threat of high inflation. Roosevelt created a special office with the power to control prices. Many Americans agreed with the idea of price controls, but every business wanted somebody else's prices controlled, not their own. Federal officials had to work hard to keep prices and supplies under control. They restricted how much meat, fuel, and other goods people could buy. The price control program generally worked. Its success kept the American economy strong to support the troops fighting in Europe and Asia. One reason these strong economic steps worked was because most of the American people fully supported the war effort.
She's the part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the riveter, keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little friend can do more than a myth and do. Rosie, the riveter, Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie. Charlie, he's a Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie, working overtime on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production lead, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie, the riveter.
You can look at photographs of people from those times and see in their faces how strongly they felt. In one picture from the state of North Carolina, a group of men are standing in front of old rubber tires. They are planning to give the tires to the Army to be fixed and used for military vehicles. Another photo shows a woman visiting a hospital. She is singing to a soldier to lift his spirits. Still another photo shows a man who owns a small food store. He is placing signs on meat and cans of food to tell people how much they are allowed to buy. You can also get an idea about the feelings of the times by the names of some of the popular songs during World War II. In addition to Rosie the Riveter, there were songs like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. One of the most hopeful songs was this one, recorded by Britain's Vera Lynn.
When the light
not all Americans supported the war. A small number refused to fight because of religious or moral beliefs. They were known as conscientious objectors. And some Americans supported Adolf Hitler and other fascists. But almost everyone else wanted to win the war quickly and return to a normal life. Many Japanese Americans served with honor in the United States Armed Forces. But many Americans were suspicious of anyone whose family had come from Japan. They refused to trust even Japanese American families who had lived in the United States for more than a century. Many banks refused to lend money to Japanese Americans. Many stores would not sell to them. The federal government relocated thousands of Japanese Americans in California and other states into internment camps. They were released only after the war ended. It was many years before the government officially apologized for mistreating Japanese Americans. But World War II did lead to progress for another group that was often the target of discrimination, Black Americans. Black leaders spoke out. They said it was unfair to fight a war for freedom in Europe while Black Americans did not have all the same freedoms as white citizens.
Negroes want the same things that white citizens possess. All of their rights, and no force under the sun can stem and block and stop this civil rights revolution which is now underway.
In 1941, a leader in the black community, A. Philip Randolph, threatened to lead a giant march on Washington for civil rights for blacks. President Roosevelt reacted by issuing an order that made it a crime to deny blacks a chance for jobs in defense industries. He also ordered the armed forces to change some of their rules that discriminated against black service members. Blacks made progress in the military and defense industries. But most other industries still refused to give them an equal chance. Major progress on civil rights would not come until the 1950s and 60s. Life was busy during the war years. There were many changes in the economy, business, music, race relations, and other areas. But in many ways, life continued as it always does. Americans did what they could during the hard years of World War II to keep life on the home front as normal as possible. But almost everyone understood that the first job was to support the troops overseas and win the war. This strength of purpose at home gave American soldiers the support they needed, and it also helped President Roosevelt as he negotiated with other world leaders. Diplomacy and foreign relations became much more complex during the war.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.